This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
Well, planning for retirement in the midst of a global pandemic is probably creating some panic in many Americans these days. But there are some good things that you should know about, in particular, to be able to stop this so-called pandemic panic. And that's where we call on Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer to help us out. Greg, thanks for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, let's take a look at some of the things that one should do to try to keep emotions out of the equation, so to speak. First off, here about goals that probably are a good idea to set anyway.
Yeah, and I think it's more critical than ever to actually create an income plan if you're coming into or nearing retirement, as we call it, the red zone, and just identify the gaps, the risks that your particular plan might have. Match them up with some of your goals, and you know, make sure you have the correct time horizons, things are matching your risk tolerance, and your overall distribution plan identifies solutions or has, you know, the actionable steps that you'll take already identified prior to any type of market correction.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and here again, I guess you have to start early, obviously. If you think about this early, then it is a lot easier to do, like you say, when you're getting up to the very end, about what kind of achievements that you want to make along the way financially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need to identify, you know, kind of what your need is, and not only now, like you mentioned, you know, as you're going through things, but also, you know, as you enter into or move towards, you know, your future and your retirement, what are the things that you're looking to accomplish? And really just to begin to look at what you're currently doing, see how well they match up, and make sure that you're on track.
I know it's very familiar to talk about market trends, and you mentioned that in the past that history does repeat itself, so the stock market is one of those repeats that can come up here. What should one know when you're going into this planning process and trying to avoid the panic that the pandemic can cause in being familiar with those market trends?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and you kind of hinted at it, Chris, is, you know, they're going to continue. Market cycles have been around forever since investing started. You know, you're going to have bull markets, you're going to have bear markets. I think currently, given our economic environment, it's probably even more difficult than ever to identify, you know, the direction of the market. Even, you know, myself, I look at it and it's kind of curious as to some of the things that occur and when they occur and how quickly they occur. But understanding that ebb and flow is going to exist, you rely on, you know, a disciplined approach, understanding that, you know, historically it repeats itself. You know, the old adage, what goes down comes up and vice versa. And just make sure that the approach you're taking is consistent with, again, your goals that we talked about, your risk tolerance, and understand that those market cycles are going to exist. And, you know, try not to let emotions grab too much of your decision process.
I guess, yeah, that's the way we can, so we don't get terribly excited one way or the other, I guess, if things change all of a sudden.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, for sure.
Another point I know that we probably need to think about, too, is we rely, of course, on financial advisors to try to keep a clear head about things. Of course, with 24/7 news coverage out there, and, of course, there are dedicated networks that we are aware of course, that keep a very close eye almost to the moment of how the stock market is doing. Just should use these things as tools rather than my place to go to for every kind of advice, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to stay informed. It's always good to continue to educate yourself, get information. News is a great resource, but you know, those news coverages, the networks, everything that happens, I mean, it changes so quickly, and that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges today is information is, you know, disseminated so quickly into, you know, the market and the volatility of it. You just want to be careful not to let the news drive your decisions, but make investment decisions based on, again, you know, what your overall strategy is, and take you know, and take the time to use those data points for maybe some of that future decision process. But understand that, again, the consistency of staying with what drives you, what your goals are, what your risk tolerance are, is the key.
We're talking with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer about some of the ways to avoid or at least stop, if it has gotten that far, the pandemic panic when it's coming to a time for planning for retirement. We talk about, of course, concerns that you want to be informed about things, but I guess there is a fear of missing out on something, and what should we know about that and try not to avoid that?
Well, yeah, I mean, the fear of missing out, we always, you know, people, when they talk about their personal experiences, I think it's just really understand that you need to ditch the herd mentality. Just because somebody else is doing it doesn't necessarily mean or dictate that you should take your approach that same path, because, you know, their situation, you know, should be and is, you know, usually different than what you're trying to do. You know, so as you get individuals or groups that, you know, are doing things, you know, emotions become just the reality for a lot of people with decision process. And generally, you know, that herd mentality exists when people don't have the guidance. They don't have somebody that they can converse with, somebody that they can chat with about what to do. They don't have a, you know, plan in place. They don't have things that, you know, will defend against some of the things that are ultimately their concerns. And often what happens is they act opposite of what they should and end up creating some, you know, long-term detrimental effects on their overall plan. Yeah. And it just makes it more difficult to be successful.
Is that what really happened, like early in the pandemic, back in March and April, where people heard about things and they decided to make some changes, but they maybe changed the wrong way?
Well, I think it was definitely part of it. You know, for, you know, when you have something come out like this, I mean, as you know, we're in unprecedented times. I mean, this is something that I think the information is so difficult to interpret. I think a lot of that is just simply due to the fact that, you know, we don't know what is accurate information, especially when it comes to, you know, the virus. You know, what exactly is COVID-19? How is it really affecting us? What's the long-term ramifications on business? And, you know, so it makes it very, it's just, we're all stepping into uncharted waters.
I know there's one point that may probably we should spend a little more time talking about than some of the other points in trying to avoid this pandemic panic, but it's basically comes down to three words: diversify your portfolio. Tell us about that.
Yes, and I think, you know, people need to understand that diversity comes in a lot of different ways, right? As we're investing, how we invest in the market, there's absolutely a value in diversifying your portfolio in a mix of assets that are not similar, you know, introducing different asset classes like, you know, stocks, bonds, you know, real estate, that type of thing. But I think it's also important to understand that there are different types of investments, things that are very correlated to what the market does. So as you see markets go up and down, you're going to see that type of trend in those holdings. But there are also things that you can do that are uncorrelated or things that aren't affected by the markets at all. So diversification of your portfolio should actually include things that are going to react differently to different types of economic response or market response to some of the things that go on. And ultimately, you know, again, those time horizons are always going to be a good compass. You know, time horizons should dictate the type of volatility that your portfolio is subject to. If we're 100% correlated to the market, we're going to experience a lot of volatility, but if we're on a time horizon that's long enough, we can weather those storms. If we're on shorter time horizons, we're nearing retirement, it's just more critical, again, to create that preservation part of your portfolio that you can draw from and utilize when the income distribution need occurs to avoid, you know, distributing from things that are down, you know, in that particular time frame that you might want money.
Is it that difficult to be able to diversify a portfolio?
Well, and diversification, again, comes in a lot of different areas, and I don't think it's that it's that difficult. I think, again, people hear about diversification, and if you asked, in my opinion, 10 people what it means, you probably would get 10 different answers. So I think it goes back to the education process, you know, understanding, you know, what are the different ways that I can diversify? How can I go just outside the norm of the diversity definition in terms of, okay, have a mix of equities versus bonds? What are some of the other things that I can introduce that would hopefully offset a downturn in the money, or things that would provide a distribution more stable for a time horizon? And that's really where the income plan again comes into play, positioning assets for purpose, understanding where to take from what type of account, when, you know, should I take from taxable, should I take from tax-free, should I take from, you know, the brokerage after-tax accounts, and where should the volatility exist, where should I have my growth, and how should that all fit into the dynamics of what my overall plan is.
Well, Greg, thanks for the advice today, and we'll be back again soon to talk.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
That's Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer. Systemic racism has a big impact on the health of Black Americans. They're more likely to have health conditions like diabetes or hypertension and more likely to die from them. Racism in medicine takes many forms, and one of them is a foundation of mistrust and misunderstanding. Side Effects Public Media's Darian Benson has a story.
Dr. Sharday Smith is a professor at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She says Black patients often lack preventative care.
We see this across all aspects in the entire process. And then if you do either contract or experience some of these conditions like hypertension or cancer, the delay in even seeking treatment really happens because of mistrust in the medical institution.
Smith says Black patients are more likely to delay going to the doctor until conditions are dire. And dismantling that mistrust means overcoming decades of history.
The one that usually comes up first, the Tuskegee syphilis experiment that went on for 40 years, where Black men were essentially denied treatment and care. And so a lot of this mistrust is stemming from experiments.
There are whole cohorts of public health students that know nothing about any of those historic injustices. So they take that lack of information or lack of awareness and replace that with myths.
That's Tony Gillespie of the Indiana Minority Health Coalition. He says numerous studies support misunderstandings about treating Black people, like the myths that their skin is tougher or that they can withstand more pain.
Black people, pain is not believed. Black people often go to the hospital, you know, they say, well, can you please tell me what your pain is from a scale from 1 to 10? And they come in on 10 and they leave on 10. And they leave on 10 with aspirin versus some sort of pain management regimen.
A new study from the New England Journal of Medicine found that some algorithms used by doctors to guide treatments are racially biased. One algorithm used to diagnose kidney stones uses a 13-point scale. The more points, the higher the risk of kidney stones. Non-Black patients are automatically given 3 extra points. The lower scores for Black patients mean doctors might not aggressively examine them for kidney stones. Both Gillespie and Smith say Black people are often blamed for these health disparities, but they and other experts note that access to healthcare, or supermarkets, or places to exercise is not equal.
Of course, we all have choices that we can make. We all can decide on what we're going to eat, or you know, where we're going to go, etc. But the opportunities and the access and the quality of that, once you get to that point, are not all equal. That's where the disparities happen.
Brianka Merritt is a researcher at the Indiana University Public Policy Institute. She says one way to improve treatment of Black patients is to teach how health interacts with other social policies.
But it requires you to understand education policy and housing policy and criminal justice policy. And that those things are a huge component because they inform all of those institutions that are beyond kind of how you individually interact with a patient or a client and inform why their situation might be the way it is or why they're presenting to you in a certain way.
Merritt says that information can help future experts understand disparities. Then they can help advocate for a change in systemic racism both in and out of the exam room. From Side Effects Public Media, I'm Darian Benson.
You can find more about racism in medicine on Side Effects Public Media's Facebook page. This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Well, we're coming down to the wire as far as the U.S. Census is concerned. The census data will be collected here through the rest of September and into October, but it's going to be finishing up pretty soon as far as collection is concerned, and everybody should be counted. And that's what I know the U.S. Census Bureau is pushing right now. They need to get the word out to make sure that the households are counted that have not yet responded to the census. With us to give us some of the latest information involving Indiana is Virginia Heyer. Virginia is is the chief of the public relations branch, but she's the chief spokesperson for the 2020 census campaign, and she joins us from Washington. And Virginia, thank you very much for being with us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first, if you will, give us an idea about the number of households, at least here in our particular area and Indiana, that have so far responded to the U.S. Census.
So right now in Indiana, we're seeing almost 97% of households to be accounted for, and that's when you include people who have responded on their own, but also who have responded when a census taker has come to their door. So we're really encouraged to see those numbers and really appreciate everyone who has participated so far, but we're not done yet. We're going to get to that 100% and just encourage, if you have not responded yet, please go to 2020census.gov right now and respond.
Now, I guess the census is really going to great lengths to make sure that everybody gets counted. Tell us, if you will, about some of the ways that the Census Bureau is making sure that we have a complete and accurate count.
We are partnering with almost 400,000 organizations across the United States and so many in Indiana. We just appreciate everyone coming together and are just so encouraged to see everyone committed to a complete and accurate count. We are also continuing to advertise to areas that are a little lower in responding to the census and are just trying to encourage everyone right now. If you haven't responded, please go online, give us a call, or fill out that paper questionnaire. And the 2020 census is just so safe to participate in. Please let us know if you have any kind of other outstanding questions. We'd be happy to answer them.
Are you finding that the folks working for the fields out there, so to speak, the various offices across the country, including Indiana, are trying to do the best they can and getting a little extra help, a little extra incentive to be sure that there's an accurate count?
Yes. The great thing about everyone who has signed up to be a census taker is that they're so committed to the civic duty of asking everyone to respond to the census. And so we're just seeing a groundswell. We have a quarter of a million people out there right now asking people to respond to the 2020 census if they haven't already. And when a census taker does come to your door, we are asking for everyone to please participate when they do. They have a census ID card, and they will also be carrying a Census Bureau bag with them, along with an iPhone to capture that population information. But we also will have our census takers wearing masks, and they will follow appropriate social distancing guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand, too, that there are mobile questionnaire assistant staffers out there in some of the areas, and I'm sure certainly in the urban areas here in Indiana, that's the case, to make sure that that everybody is maybe responding and hasn't responded before, but making sure that they do get counted. How is the situation set up so that these folks that are out there in the open and public areas are making sure that there's a count?
Yes, we are sending Census Bureau representatives to kind of high traffic areas like grocery stores where people are going right now. And they are out in the parking lots or kind of to the side, and they practice social distancing and wear masks as well, and are asking people, have you responded to the census? If not, we're here to help you. And they will walk you through how to respond to the 2020 census on a tablet. And we'll just ask that you guys punch in your address and answer just a few basic demographic questions.
I know that for the first time, and it's all because of the COVID-19 pandemic, that the U.S. Census Bureau has to visit homes in some hard-to-reach areas. Well, how are you making sure that if you do it by phone, that the folks on the other end of the line, the people you want to count, that you want to talk to, realize that this is legit, this is for real, it's not a scam?
Yes, a Census Bureau representative may call you, and they'll identify themselves as working for the Census Bureau. They will also provide a phone number that you can call, and you'll find this phone number on our website as well. It is 844-330-2020. And they'll also just ask some basic demographic questions. If you get any questions, these are the questions that we do not ask on the census. We do not ask about financial information. We do not ask about your social security number, and we will not ask anything on behalf of a political party. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting any of those questions, you can know that they are not from the Census Bureau.
Now, we've mentioned this before in the last conversation that we had. It was at the start of the census count, of the importance of being sure that you're counted, that the 2020 census is very, very important. A lot rides on that, and it's mainly because we want to be sure that everybody's counted so that all of the funds that everybody is due, I guess, in one way or another, will go to them or to the representatives, the organizations. Explain again, if you will, about how the federal funds are allocated to communities all across the country, including Indiana, and want to be sure that they go for very, very important programs.
The 2020 census will determine how billions, with a B, dollars are distributed to the local communities every single year for the next 10 years. So we need to know how many people live in Indiana to ensure that you guys are getting the vital resources that you need for things like emergency services, school lunch programs, and highway and road grants. Those are all based off of population numbers that come from the Census Bureau.
And once again, if anybody has questions, if they need to know more information about the census and the days that are left in getting the count taken, how can they find out more, please?
Please go to 2020census.gov. You can respond there. And if you have already responded, thank you so much. Please check in with your neighbor, and while you're doing so, see if they've responded to the census, because we want to ensure that everyone is counted.
Virginia Heyer is an official spokesperson for the U.S. Census Bureau. We're in the final days of the 2020 census count process. Once the count comes in, then it's time to start working through the figures and getting all the numbers crunched and all the data together, and we'll go from there, and we'll see how important the Census Bureau is when we finally figure out how many counted in the state of Indiana as well as the rest of the country. Virginia, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.